Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, COVID-19, Paradigm and Public Enemy. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to be taking a look back through some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when we were all still stuck in our houses.
Yes, COVID-19 lockdown continues. We are still responsibly containing ourselves to our homes, which means once again, this podcast is being recorded from two different locations, two different roofs. We both record this in roofs. Just a little bit of, you know, background context there for people listening. They can imagine us both sitting in roofs. We are recording this on Friday afternoon. We've recorded these homemade podcast previously over the weekend, but we've managed to get it into the working week. Although I have noticed only today that someone down the street from me is doing quite a lot of drilling, which I don't think they do at the weekend. But I mean, to be fair, maybe they have a job that requires doing a lot of drilling and they're now working from home.
Just drilling their own floors.
And it would be unfair of me to say I need silence because my job at home requires silence for recording a podcast, and they can say, well, my job requires lots of drilling. So I suppose if there is some drilling in the background, actually I think it's stopped, so that's quite fortuitous. But if we do hear some drilling in the background, also I heard well, because where you live, there's lots of seagulls, aren't there? So there's always the chance that some seagulls will hover over your house and we'll hear the seagulls. But there was bird noise here as well, in East London, of all places, earlier. I think it was, it sounded like a cuckoo. Can we have a cuckoo in Leytonstone? I don't know.
I don't think there's any law against it.
Maybe they've, well, obviously we've all seen those pictures, haven't we, of the goats in Llandudno in North Wales. And then apparently somewhere in East London, not this bit of East London, some deer have appeared from somewhere. So the wildlife is coming out due to the lack of human beings. So maybe that's why we've now got a cuckoo in Leytonstone that might be on the background of this podcast. Who knows? So yeah, COVID-19 is still the dominating news story wherever you look, wherever you live. Well, I say that, obviously, here in the UK, across most of Europe, and a lot of countries are still very much in the midst of the COVID-19 lockdown. And so there are quite a lot of music industry news is still linked to that in one way or another, the impact of the lockdown on the business, various initiatives to try and help those affected by that. Although we have decided this week that we're not going to dedicate the majority of the podcast talking about COVID-19 like we have done for the last couple of weeks, although we have got a lawsuit that's kind of related to COVID-19.
Yeah, but we'll come to that. But like you said, we didn't want to devote a whole section of this week's podcast to the ongoing public health crisis because I think everyone's aware that it's happening now. And actually, news in that regard has died down a bit this week. We have started getting more regular music industry news this week. Things going on with companies and people leaving and people getting new jobs. Things like that, that have nothing to do with COVID-19, which has been quite a novelty after such a long time of very little else. But we thought it would be a good idea, like we did last week, just to run through some of the support schemes that have been announced in the last week by different organisations and companies to keep everyone up to date with those.
Yes, because although in the last few days we no longer have entire editions of the CMU Daily, which are pretty much every story to do with COVID-19, we even have some top stories this week, lead stories in the Daily Bulletin, which were not COVID-19 related. That said, of course, we should acknowledge, as lockdown continues, the impact on the music industry, the live side, the studio side, the education side, the retail side, all of that continues. Those government initiatives we talked about last week, people are still working out quite how those can help, whether that's helping individuals, helping companies. And of course, there are still some gaps here in the UK with that government support, and every country has its own systems. But yeah, I think the things we thought we would quickly mention today are some of the music industry-led initiatives, whether those are company-led or charity-led, that have been announced in the last 7 days, which are either already tangibly offering other sources of income for those music people negatively impacted, or commitments have been made and further support is coming down the line.
Yeah, so Universal Music has announced a number of initiatives to support employees, artists, songwriters, distributed labels and other partners during the pandemic, which includes interest-free royalty advances, fee waivers and faster payment of invoices. It's also making financial contributions to COVID-19 funding schemes such as those run by MusicAires in the US and Help Musicians in the UK.
Yeah, I think we've already mentioned on previous set lists both of those initiatives, one in the US, one in the UK, set up by pre-existing charities who have the infrastructure in place to accept applications from artists and musicians who have been negatively impacted by the live industry shutdown and all of the other Impacts of COVID-19. Help Musicians is the big one, I suppose, here in the UK. Not the only fund. Obviously, the MU still has their fund. PRS has their fund. But I think it is good that actually quite a lot of the companies that have come along and said, we want to provide some financial support. Quite a lot of those companies, like Universal Music, like Spotify, a few days before, have said that they're going to give the money to Help Musicians. So rather than setting up yet another fund for people to get their head around, a lot of musicians now are working out how the Help Musicians Fund works. It's not a huge sum of money that's available, but crucially, it's very quick sums of money. One thing I definitely know, because I've heard quite a few people who have benefited from this scheme already, they are saying the thing that Help Musicians has really sorted out is getting that money turned around quite quickly, so that people are usually seeing their money in their bank account within a few days. But a lot of musicians have already tapped that fund. A lot of the money that Help Musicians itself had set aside has already gone. So it's good news that the Spotifys and Universals of this world are putting extra money into that fund as more and more musicians approach it in order to be able to pay their bills and keep food on the table.
Still sticking with the major labels and publishers, the owner of Sony Music and Sony ATV, the Sony Corporation, has launched a $100 million COVID-19 relief fund covering its entire business, so not just its record label and publisher. It's seeking to support three groups of people: frontline medical staff, children and educators who've had to shift over to home-based learning, and those in the creative community, including people working in music, film and TV, who have been negatively impacted by the COVID-19 shutdown.
Yeah, because of course the wider Sony business, I mean, we always talk about Sony in the context of the Sony Music Record Company and the Sony ATV publishing company, but of course Sony also has its movie studios, its TV production companies, and they're obviously very big in the gaming sector as well, and lots of movies, TVs and people on that side of the entertainment business, they've had to shut down productions as well, which means those people who are freelance, self-employed, are also being negatively hit, just like in the music industry. So yeah, Sony was saying that quite how this money is going to be distributed, we don't yet know. It may well be that they're looking for existing funds like Music Heirs and Help Musicians to put that money through, but we have got some significant sums of money seemingly coming through from the wider Sony group to support not just the creative community, some other really important areas as well. But there will hopefully be more money coming through for artists and musicians and songwriters who've been negatively impacted, and possibly the people who work behind the scenes in music, because quite a lot of the funds that have been announced so far have skewed towards artists and songwriters who are amongst the people who have been immediately hit by this. Those artists who are not the millionaires, they're not the pop stars, for whom live is how they make money. A lot of those people have lost their income overnight. But of course, there are also the people who work in those venues, at those festivals, on those tours, people who work in the studios as well, who possibly have not been targeted as much through these schemes. Remains to see where the Sony money goes, although there was one other fund by one of the other big companies in the music industry this week, which was more skewed to the people who work behind the scenes.
Yeah, over on the live side, Live Nation launched a fund to support those on the production side of live music, who are also, as we've previously discussed, among the first people to be hit when the live industry was basically switched off overnight. So Live Nation is committing up to $10 million to its new Crew Nation fund. It's writing a cheque for $5 million straight away and then encouraging artists, fans and employees to donate further through either direct donations or by buying bespoke merch. And it will match those donations up to a further $5 million.
And that money is going to be distributed through an existing foundation that actually is linked to the Live Nation group. It's a foundation that existed for quite some time, set up by the House of Blues venue network in America, which then got bought by Live Nation 15 years ago. So again, using a pre-existing foundation to distribute that money. There's already a website where you can donate or buy that merch that we just mentioned, and then they're going to set up another web page at some point quite soon. Who knows? Maybe it'll be live by the time this podcast goes out, explaining how people who work on the production side of live can seek funding to help them pay rent, keep food on the table, etc. We're still working out whether or not that will be predominantly for people in America or whether or not it will also apply to people over here in the UK and elsewhere in Europe. More details should be going online quite soon, I think.
There's a couple of other initiatives on the live side. So obviously Live Nation's a major live company supporting the grassroots live industry. The Music Venue Trust has called on the music industry, the wider cultural sector and some of Britain's most successful musicians to come together and create £1 million fighting fund to prevent the closure of grassroots music venues in the UK as the COVID-19 shutdown continues.
And then sort of linked to that, We had one other announcement put out this week, which basically returns us to the government initiatives to help support the music industry, music companies and people working in music. Because, I mean, as I've already said, although these charitable funds that are being set up are all really important and all doing something really, really good, they are generally offering relatively small chunks of money to artists just to get them through the next few weeks. Assuming this lockdown's going to be here for a couple of months, maybe even longer than that, companies and individuals are going to need to access bigger chunks of money to survive. And that is where we then look to the government initiatives. We talked about some of the government initiatives that have been launched here in the UK last week. And obviously similar initiatives are being set up by governments all around the world. But this week we had a call from an organisation called the Nighttime Industries Association, which would also include the grassroots venues and the bigger venues, but also the clubs, the bars, the restaurants, all those businesses that keep cities and towns busy at nighttime. And they've acknowledged that there are already here in the UK some decent initiatives from the government to help companies and people dealing with the COVID-19 lockdown. But there's one thing that they think that the government still needs to do. And interestingly, the Nighttime Industry Association has teamed up with landlords on this, because what a lot of those kinds of businesses, the venues, the bars, the clubs, etc., what they need in order to survive the shutdown is they need to be able to be let off paying rent during that period. But they have acknowledged that many of the landlords to whom they owe rent in turn owe money to the banking sector through mortgages. So what the Nighttime Industry Association and the landlords of many of its members are proposing is, and I quote, that all financial commitments to banks in terms of mortgages, loans and financial agreements should be frozen for a period of time without effect on any current covenants or balances in terms of interest. And during that period, no further debt would be accrued by those landlords and the people who owed the money to the banks, so that the landlords are let off their financial commitments to the financial sector, which means the landlords can then help the restaurants, the bars, the clubs, the venues who can't afford to pay their rent during this time. So another government initiative being called for there on top of those that have already been announced here in the UK. We are yet to get a response from the government. Obviously, they're making their daily announcements. It can be hard to keep up with what it is that they're announcing, but it remains to be seen how the government responds to that proposal by the Nighttime Industry Association for further support for the venues, the pubs, the clubs, the restaurants, the nighttime businesses who are still shut down for the time being as the COVID-19 lockdown continues.
But as we said, that's not what we're here to talk about this week. Not entirely. Anyway, coming up later, we've got a whole story, no COVID-19 at all. Maybe a bit, actually. But anyway, later on, we're going to be discussing Public Enemy's big either hoax or non-hoax, depending on who you believe and what you understand, which might be nothing. But we are going to start with a lawsuit, because as we've discussed previously, lawyers seem to be working at full capacity throughout this. And our first story, actually, despite everything I've said already, it is COVID-19 related.
Yeah, this is a very interesting and, entertaining lawsuit in some ways that begins with a music company's response to the COVID-19 crisis. So although actually many of the allegations in this lawsuit, some of the more sordid allegations in this lawsuit, are not related to the current pandemic, the actual essence of the lawsuit is, and it has to be said, I mean, this had occurred to me already, but it didn't feel that last week or the week before on set list was the right time to say so. My assumption is, once all of this is over, and please can that be sooner rather than later, once this is all over, there is going to be a flurry of lawsuits in relation to the COVID-19 shutdown. Lawsuits against companies, lawsuits against government, lawsuits against individuals and the way they responded to the crisis, particularly in the US, obviously, where things are generally much more litigious. So I was sort of thinking, yeah, down the line, we're going to have a lot of litigation to plow our way through, some of which will be entertainment and music industry relevant. But I must admit, I was not expecting it to happen this quickly. So already we have a lawsuit being filed in the American courts, which is in relation to COVID-19 and specifically the reaction and response to the live industry shutdown caused by COVID-19 by one of the big talent agencies in the US. And that talent agency is Paradigm.
Yes, because talent agencies have been among the companies to feel the immediate impact of measures put in place to restrict and delay the spread of COVID-19, it having resulted in the rapid shutdown of live entertainment and ongoing movie and TV productions, all of which Paradigm is involved in. And Paradigm was one of the first companies to respond to the crisis with significant redundancies, laying off 250 staff members, although it said that it hoped those would be temporary measures and that employees would be able to return within 6 months.
Yeah, Paradigm isn't the only agency to have had to instigate measures to deal with the impact of the COVID-19 shutdown of live music and, of course, the TV and film business, as you say. A number of other agencies have either had to temporarily lay off staff, or in some cases, it's been more that they're looking to maybe cut people's salaries during this time. I think here in the UK, many of the agencies have been looking at the government initiatives that are out there, which were announced a little bit quicker here in the UK, that have helped some of those agencies to keep the staff on, and then they're getting the government support where they can. But certainly in the US, where this story relates to, we have seen other talent agencies responding with their own measures, although it has to say that Paradigm's laying off of those 250 members of staff came incredibly quickly, and that did seem to be a very severe cutback. And there had been a number of criticisms of the way Paradigm had gone about this, in particular in relation to the health insurance of the staff that had been temporarily laid off, because of course in the US, particularly when you've got a pandemic, that's really important. And initially Paradigm had said that it would carry on covering those staff members' health insurance to the end of April. After quite a bit of bad press around that, they then extended that to the end of June. But there had been some criticism of the way Paradigm had so quickly instigated such severe measures compared to some of their competitors. But yeah, this lawsuit that has been filed this last week by this agent on the TV side of the business, Debbie Klein, who's been with Paradigm for a very long time, and the lawsuit that she has filed really ramps up that criticism of the agency, and in particular of its CEO, Sam Gouras. And this lawsuit not only makes allegations about Paradigm's response to COVID-19, it also makes a whole load of allegations about his management, or in her eyes, his mismanagement of the agency, and throws in a whole load of allegations, some of which are quite sensational. We should add that Paradigm and Gouras have already denied all of this. We'll get to their statement in a short while. But some very bombastic allegations are contained within this lawsuit.
Among those is the claim that Gouras used the pandemic as an excuse to get rid of staff he wanted to make redundant anyway. It claims that the staff who've been pushed out were all people who Gouras felt were overpaid, and the decision to push them out was, I quote, a direct result of his own financial mismanagement of Paradigm, especially his disastrous negotiations with United Talent Agency, which single-handedly torpedoed the planned 2019 merger between the two agencies.
Yeah, there had been long rumours that these two talent agencies, Paradigm and UTA, were going to merge. That merger didn't happen. And what this lawsuit is saying is that the way that Gouras managed those merger talks were improper and resulted in the merger not going through. That's the allegation in Klein's lawsuit. Elsewhere, she makes a number of other allegations about his management conduct at the company. She accuses him of dodgy accounting, of misogyny in the workplace, of paying for prostitutes with company money, and lying to the agency's business partners, including its UK subsidiaries, because Paradigm owns some booking agencies in the UK, about things like the abandoned merger with UTA. It also then, I guess, contrasts what Paradigm has done with what has happened at some other music companies, where we have seen the most senior members of staff, who get by far the biggest pay packages, agreeing to take a pay cut, or in some cases to just not take a salary for a period of time, so that there is still money available to pay those lower down the hierarchy. And basically what this lawsuit is doing is that Gouras basically did the opposite of that. He ensured that he was going to carry on getting paid while putting 250 of his team out of work.
Yeah, the lawsuit says Mr. Gouras is so incredibly tone deaf that instead of offering reduction or forbearance of his own salary or a contribution of his income to help provide Paradigm employees with a regular salary and health insurance, Sam Gouras chose to kick these individuals to the curb. The lawsuit also accuses Gouras of using the Paradigm company as his personal piggy bank, and in relation to redundancies, says that the staff who were cut recently did not include his personal driver or private chef.
So, yeah, lots of very interesting allegations in this lawsuit, although really the lawsuit is focused on Klein's own dismissal, despite being a long-term agent, a very successful agent at Paradigm. And at the heart of the case is a claim of breach of contract, which is related to her dismissal. And what the lawsuit says in relation to that is that despite Mr. Gores recently praising Klein as the best agent at Paradigm, apparently, he rewarded her loyalty and consistent high performance by terminating her employment via a phone call lasting less than 1 minute. Unfortunately for Mr. Gores and what remains of the Paradigm agency, the lawsuit then says, he forgot that Paradigm had recently entered into a binding oral employment contract. I mean, the oral bit's quite important there for probably how Paradigm will push back on this, but Klein's lawsuit said that they had forgotten that the company had entered into a binding oral employment contract with Ms. Klein recently, under which she could only be terminated for good cause. Therefore, she argues, he is now in breach of contract, and therefore the company will have to pay her the almost $2 million that is still owing on that agreement that had been relatively recently reached. And then the lawsuit carries on that Gores is hoping to avoid scrutiny by terminating Ms. Klein in the midst of the present pandemic. His gambit has failed, the lawsuit reckons, and Paradigm must now answer for its unlawful acts in a court of law. I think from the quotes we've been sharing with you, you can see that in other circumstances, it feels wrong to be getting excited about lawsuits like this in the current context, but this is an entertaining lawsuit, both in the nature of the allegations being made and the language being employed in the lawsuit. But again, we must stress that Paradigm very quickly put out a statement about this through their attorneys, basically saying that nothing she's saying is true and that they will fight this in court and are confident they will win.
Yes, they said both Paradigm and Mr. Gores expect to be 100% vindicated, and our intention is to respond further in court filings. So there is more to come on this.
Yes, the allegations in the lawsuit they then added were false, frivolous, and scurrilous. Does frivolous and scurrilous, are they not the same thing, or are they different?
It's good to get as many adjectives in as possible, even if they are the same. But you want three, don't you? It's always a problem. Sometimes you do have to put in two words that mean basically the same thing just to get three things in. There's a little writing tip for you there.
The meter demands that there are one, two, three things to say. Yes. So the allegations were false, they were frivolous, and they were scurrilous, says Paradigm. So yes, it'll be interesting to see how this case progresses. By what Paradigm's attorneys were saying there, we would expect that the next stage in this story would be their own response for a filing of the court. Quite how quickly we'll get that, we don't yet know.
But so far, this has very much set the bar for pandemic-related lawsuits. So take note, other lawyers looking into this.
Yes, your COVID-19 lawsuits, whenever they're going to come in, and some of you might think maybe we should wait a few months before we start going litigious. But they're going to have to be quite entertaining to beat this one.
And finally this week, it's Public Enemy's big April Fool's Day joke, which may not have been a joke or even a thing at all. Who knows? No one!
Yes, it could be that this entire last segment of Setlist is us talking in some detail about a thing that didn't happen or may have happened, that didn't happen like we're going to describe it happening, but maybe it didn't happen or maybe it did happen. It's very confusing, basically.
It is very confusing.
First of all, we should acknowledge that last week was April Fool's Day, and we had a quick conversation, didn't we, on the 31st of March, because obviously, as people monitoring the world of music and the music business, part of our news gathering operation every day is that we're tracking what all the other media are saying around the world, the entertainment media, the celebrity media, the business media, and what's happening on the PR machine and on socials. And every year on the 31st of March, when you're looking at all of the feeds out there, you're having to constantly look at them and think, oh my God, are we going to be taken in by an April Fool's joke here and then report it as fact in the CMU Daily? And how embarrassing would that be? Of course, it used to be that that was only an issue when you were following stories happening with other media. But then there was that whole period a few years ago, wasn't there, when PR people started sending April Fool press releases. And it was like, what's going on here? Why are you sending me, seemingly as an official press release, a nonsense April Fool's joke?
Yes, and the prevalence of things, it made it so difficult. Like, the April Fool's does not work in the internet age, because it's not just a case that you had to, like, for 12 hours on April the 1st, you had to look at any story and go, is that a joke? Because the way that things live on and things get re-reported and re-reported, it's actually, it takes up a whole week. You can still a week later be looking at something going, well, that was published on the 3rd of April, but was it actually a joke that someone's fallen for somewhere else?
Yeah, exactly. So the original story was published somewhere on the 1st, and then somebody else reported it on the 2nd, and then someone on the 3rd, and then we're seeing it on the 7th.
There's also the fact that people do not adhere to the rules of April Fool's Day, and this falls very much into that. April Fool's Day, which I thought everyone knew, it lasts for 12 hours from midnight until midday on April the 1st. And if you tell a joke after that, you are the fool. That's the rule. And that's how it's always been. But now people will publish stuff in the afternoon of April the 1st and go like, well, there's a joke. And it's not on.
To be fair, the traditional rules of April Fool's Day don't take into account time zones, do they? Which has only really become,
I suppose,
an issue in the internet age that,
Well, but then I saw one this week that was in the UK and it was published at 2:30. And that is just not on.
Well, we should lock those people up. But the point is,
we should,
that every year on the 31st of March and then for the following week, we're having to be vigilant. But the conversation we specifically had on the 31st of March this year was, are people still planning on running with April Fool's jokes, given where we are in the world right now? It sort of doesn't feel... Well, I mean, your argument is the whole April Fool thing kind of doesn't work in the internet age anyway. We should just get beyond it. And maybe in the last couple of years, we haven't seen quite as much of these spoof stories going around. Not least because...
Well, especially when fake news is a year-round thing.
Exactly. There are spoof stories every day of the week now. But we were sort of saying, will people still go through with April Fool's, given that the news agenda at the moment is so dominated by such a serious news story with the COVID-19 pandemic? And I think it's true to say there were a lot less April Fool's stories being run. Certainly no April Fool's press releases going out this year, which may be part of a continuing trend, although I think, you know, COVID-19 had a big impact on that. But there were a handful out there, and that is what we're here to talk about today. This one, as you've already alluded to, was an April Fool's joke, or maybe it wasn't. But even if it was, well, it certainly breaks your rule, because the setup of this supposed hoax, maybe not a hoax, it's such a confusing introduction, but you'll see it's because it's a really confusing story. But the setup of this possible April Fool began in February, and that is not allowed.
No, because back in February, Public Enemy's Flavor Flav took exception to the rest of the group, who have been performing without it for a number of years under the name Public Enemy Radio, which only makes this more confusing. There's two Public Enemies, one with Flavor Flav, one without. But Public Enemy Radio were booked to play a benefit for Bernie Sanders to help him in his bid to become US president. And Flavor Flav didn't like that, and he went so far as to send a cease and desist letter to the other members of Public Enemy, claiming that it appeared that they were speaking for him, even though he doesn't support Bernie Sanders.
Yes, although the benefit show was Public Enemy Radio, which, as you've already said, is a version of Public Enemy without Flavor Flav, and that was how it was billed, but... because it's already confusing that Public Enemy Radio is Public Enemy minus one member. He was basically saying...
Well, you think in naming conventions, that seems like it's a Public Enemy DJ set, but it's not. It's a group performing basically as Public Enemy, but without Flavor Flav.
And so he was saying the way it was communicated, people would think it was a Public Enemy show, therefore they would think he was involved, therefore they would think that he, like the other members of the group, were endorsing Bernie Sanders. He wasn't happy with that, so he issued this cease and desist, and then shortly after all of that had happened, there was then another hoo-ha, where basically Flavor Flav declared to the world that because of this bust-up over the Bernie Sanders benefit show, he had now been sacked from Public Enemy, and he was basically being pushed out of the group based on his political beliefs and because he didn't support the same potential presidential candidate as the rest of the group.
But then the rest of the group put out a statement saying that actually he just hadn't been involved for several years now because, quote, he always chose to party over work. And so it was all quite a bitter and angry fallout with lots of back and forth. It was widely reported. This is well before the 1st of April. This is back in beginning of March. But it had all sort of fizzled out since then.
Now, of course, when we say the rest of Public Enemy, what we really mean is Chuck D.
Yes.
So most of this was a back and forth between Flavor Flav and Chuck D. So yes, after the falling out over the Bernie Sanders show, we then had the line that Flavor Flav had been sacked from Public Enemy at large. Remember, he was never a member of Public Enemy Radio, but he was now not a member of Public Enemy either. And the difference of opinion was whether or not that was a result of the Bernie Sanders thing and it being pushed out for political reasons, or whether it was actually he'd been kind of chucked out of the band some time ago because he just wasn't working hard enough. Nobody knew. Nobody really cared. COVID-19 pandemic kicked off in Europe and across the US. We all forgot that that was even happening until the 1st of April.
Yes. Now, if you've been struggling to keep up with this so far, strap in, my friends. On the 1st of April, Public Enemy Radio, now just calling themselves Enemy Radio, released an album called Loud Is Not Enough. And they released a single from it called Food as a Machine Gun, which is listed as Enemy Radio featuring Public Enemy. And it says that because Flavor Flav is on it, meaning that the full lineup of Public Enemy is on this Enemy Radio track. And then in an effort to clear up why Flavor Flav was working with them, despite having apparently been fired, Chuck D put out a statement saying that he and Flavor Flav had hijacked the day as April Flav Chuck Day to end the hoax with Enemy Radio's new song Food as a Machine Gun. Don't believe the hype, 2020 style.
Yeah, so basically what Chuck D was saying was that whole bust up we had a few weeks ago, that was a hoax, that was a joke, that was the setup for the punchline. The punchline is we're putting out this track, it's an Enemy Radio track, but Flavor Flav is on there. That shows we're all still best mates. That whole him being sacked, that was a ruse, and it was basically all so we could use April Fool's Day to help promote our new album, and the single from it on which Flavor Flav appears is what Chuck D said. We used to run a column from Chuck D back in the days when CMU was a magazine, so in one level we should be taking Chuck D's side on this, although it has to be said, it kind of felt like, even if that had been the end of this story, spoiler alert, it's not, but even if that had been the end of this story, it kind of felt like a bit of a lackluster April Fool. I mean, not only was it breaking your April Fool's rules, even if it hadn't been breaking...
Not my rules, the world's rules.
Even if it hadn't been breaking the rules, it was also just not a very good April Fool's Day stunt. But anyway, that was what Chuck D said on the 1st of April. But, as I've said, this is not where the story ends.
No. So while we were all very confused about this prank and why they'd done it, what exactly they had done, I mean, Chuck D did an interview with Talib Kweli for his People's Party podcast, and he said there that the whole thing was inspired by Orson Welles' 1938 War of the Worlds radio broadcast, which famously people thought was a real broadcast and thought that the world was really being attacked by aliens and ran out terrified into the streets. And that is definitely not what happened here. Just a lot of people sat in front of computers going, what? And then Chuck D also took exception with people calling it a joke, saying that it was actually very serious, but we still couldn't really work out what it was. And then on top of all of that, Flavor Flav also got angry. In fact, he took exception to the whole thing, claiming not only not to be in on this gag at all, but he thought the whole thing was in poor taste given the current circumstances of the world.
Yeah, so Flavor Flav took to Twitter and tweeted at Chuck D the line, I am not part of your hoax, which...
Yeah, we shouldn't deny that there was a hoax.
No, I mean, my inference of that was that he had been sacked from the band and he didn't know that this was a ruse and he didn't know that all of this was going to be revealed on the 1st of April in order to sell a record. But maybe it doesn't mean that. But certainly what we can take, because what he then followed up in his tweet, is that he wasn't impressed that Chuck D had done the big reveal. There may not be a big reveal, we don't yet know that. But even if there was a big reveal, which we think Flav might be saying there isn't, but even if he's saying there is, that the big reveal shouldn't have happened in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. Said Flavor Flav, there are more serious things in the world right now than April Fool's jokes and dropping records. The world needs better than this. You say we are leaders, so act like one. And that was pretty much the last word on this as we record this podcast. Maybe there'll be more developments on this in the week ahead. Although I have to say, I can't quite face the thought of us returning to this story on a future edition. So maybe we'll just say that it ends there.
Yeah, if you were hoping for some kind of resolution on this, oh, I'm very sorry, because there is none. We barely understand what's happened. And we were just hoping someone could tell us.
But what we possibly could say is that Chuck D always an innovator, has confirmed once and for all that we don't need April Fool's jokes, not only in the middle of a COVID-19 pandemic, but we don't need April Fool's jokes in the online internet fake news age. And if that memo could be sent around everybody for next April, that would be really helpful. And there are some other pop stars who probably need that memo.
Yes, there was certainly one, because like we say, there weren't that many April Fool's jokes this year, but the one, I think the big one, the one that really backfired, was K-pop star Kim Jae-jung, who was forced to apologise after telling his fans that he'd been hospitalised with COVID-19 due to ignoring government warnings and living carelessly. He hadn't. It was all a joke. He revealed it later, and the fans were not happy about this. Quite rightly so.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if we wanted to give Chuck D the benefit of the doubt, maybe he could argue that he went ahead with his stunt because he wanted to distract everybody from the stresses and trauma of the COVID-19 pandemic. So he just wanted to give people something different to think about. Maybe we could accept that argument. But using COVID-19 itself as part of your April Fool's prank, yeah, that doesn't seem like a very good idea. And this guy was forced to issue a bit of a grovelling apology, although he tried to insist, didn't he, that he was trying to educate people about COVID-19. I mean, he clearly wasn't. I mean, that was a really rubbish excuse.
Yes, he said he was just trying to raise awareness of the dangers. And I think, I mean, people know the dangers now, don't they? They don't need someone to play a joke pretending that they're in hospital dying. So, yeah, that did not go well. He also, I mean, he's now lost work as a result of it. So it's really backfired.
So anyway, April Fool's is over for another year. Maybe, even though hopefully this time last year, there won't be quite so many serious, distressing stories dominating the news agenda. Surely we'll be over all of this in 12 months' time. But maybe we could all agree, no more April Fool's jokes, and that would be lovely.
Yes, we have no time for April Fool's jokes, and we have no time left on this episode of Setlist either. But you can subscribe on all manner of podcast services to receive the next episode next week automatically. You don't have to do anything except press play on it, and that is the wonder of the internet, isn't it? You can also, through the wonder of the internet, I'm not sure if email is wonderful, but you can email us about anything we've discussed in this episode, or, you know, just stuff generally. You're probably a bit bored at the moment. Just email us, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Setlist is an Unlimited production.